What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Still the most special guest there ever was on the pop. My goodness.
Surely the specialiest.
Yep, that's me. I'm special.
I'm deciding that if I lean into your special guest status, then you won't harp on it too heavily, and then maybe it'll just sort of like fall in, and that's like what it'll be.
Oh, is that what you think?
Yeah. It's like,
I see what strategy you're going for. But
right, like, it's like when you appease somebody, then there's no more tension, and when there's no tension, motivation is dropped.
You can't make fun of someone if they agree with you.
Exactly.
It's no fun.
No, it's no fun at all. This was learning to laugh at yourself in like grade school, middle school, high school, any moment like where you had like that person in class who was making fun of you for something. The sooner you were able to learn how to roll with it and be like a part of the laughter instead of like internalizing it, which is hard.
Oh, what you're asking is basically impossible.
It is basically impossible. Like it is the most obvious and easy advice, but the execution, because it, especially if somebody like hits one of those things that you're like particularly self-conscious about.
Oh, and let me tell you, no one in the world is better than middle schoolers and high schoolers at looking at you and assessing your exact weakness.
Yes.
In the most
with like
visceral terms.
With surgical precision.
It is scary.
It is scary. It is remarkable. Like, I don't know if it is the case, and maybe it was the high school we went to, which only had like maybe 800 students. So like it's pretty remarkable how quickly you pretty much know all 200 people in your grade.
Sure.
For the most part. I mean, there are people probably that you had fewer conversations with, but for me, I could have like, if you gave me like flashcards, at least while I was in high school, I could have named every single person in my class.
Not now. You'd miss a few.
I would definitely miss a few now. There have been occasions where my friends have been like, hey, you remember this person from high school? And I'm like, literally not at all. Like, so apologies if you went to high school with me and you think there's even a shred of doubt that I had forgotten you.
Do you have people who attended our high school who you would hear other people constantly talk about, but who you had never met or seen or had no idea who it was?
There were occasions where like that person existed, where everybody would, exactly what you said. Everybody would always be talking about him, or like friends that we knew would be like, oh yeah, like this person, we went and did this thing. I feel like there was somebody that GMA members Mike and John were friends with named like Michael Kluge.
That's exactly who I was thinking of.
Shout out to the Klugs.
No idea who you are, Fred. No idea. I know that our two best friends talked about you a lot. Who you are? I don't know.
It was this bizarre thing where I don't know what was happening, because it was like, for all I know, Michael Kluge was literally John and Mike's other best friend. And it seemed like if they weren't hanging out with us, they were hanging out with the Klugs. And it was like, what is happening that these wires are literally never crossing?
Yeah, how do I not know what this even person looks like?
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't like, oh yeah, I know who he is. I just haven't actually spoken to him.
Right.
Like, if he walked through the door right now, I would be like, he could lie to me about his name and I couldn't like call him on it, you know?
Oh, sure.
I'd be like, that's your name. Yeah.
Philip Dunshire.
Like, yeah. I wouldn't be like, that sounds made up. I'd be like, what's up? Nice to meet you, Philip. I'm a big fan of The Lamplighter.
The Lamplighter? Yeah. What's The Lamplighter?
From the Cones of Dunshire.
Oh, man, I have done this twice in 2 weeks. Wow. Apparently Dunshire is like the word I'm going to for made-up names.
Okay, let me ask you this. Do you have a go-to made-up name for yourself?
Ooh.
And like an alias, if you're like at a party or something, and you're just like, well, maybe I'll be someone else tonight.
I'm going to be a different person.
Right.
It's a weird skin, like not using your own name. I don't think so. Mm. I feel like the GMA did have this, it seemed like, for a little while, or at the very least, maybe John Jennings was always Peter.
I do. Now that you say it, that for some reason rings a bell in my mind. I don't know why I don't think I ever called him that, though.
I think what it was is there was this one night that we were at Mill Mountain Coffee. The four of us were like hanging out, and like an infomercial person like came over to the table and started.
A multi-level marketing person
like came over to our table and started pitching us on this idea. Most unusual way that this has ever come up before.
Right.
Like, It was not like a meeting. It wasn't a planned event. It wasn't like a, you know.
Oh.
It was like we just happened to be there drinking our espresso milkshakes.
Yeah.
And this person comes over. And we talked to them for an hour.
Because that's how they're like try and rope you in. And they like will sit there and pitch you. Oh my gosh. Nothing makes me more upset than multi-level marketing scams. Which really? Is all of them. Is all of them. If you're like, no, but this one's different. It's not. It is not. They're all scams. You're getting scammed.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
You're passionate about this.
Dude, they are destructive and toxic forces that, like, ruin people's lives. They are not cool. They benefit, like, one or two people on top, and they're just, they make me so mad. I don't like them.
Man, yeah. This feels like strong opinions about things that maybe kind of matter.
This is strong opinions about things that matter.
Yeah.
do not get sucked in. If your friend is like, oh yeah, buy my products. And you're like, I just thought I'd help them out. Believe you me, you are not helping them out by buying those products. You are helping them out by being like, dude, stop. This is like, you have got to get out. This is not good.
I can tell you that the only instance that I had someone who was a former aquarium customer of mine, and they were like circa the same age, so like kind of exiting college around the same time. And I remember he started selling those, I think that's called Cutco knives.
Uh-huh.
They're like, you go like door to door selling like a really nice kitchen knife.
Yeah.
And I do remember that he called me one night and he immediately used the like, Ben, I have an opportunity for you.
Oh, gosh.
And I was like, let me stop you right there.
Barf.
I actually do. I remember this conversation. It stuck with me in such a strange way. I was driving down Starkey Road when I had it. Like, I can go back
you
to
can
the
go
moment.
There.
Yes. I remember like having this compulsion or sense of responsibility where it was almost like I was able to recognize exactly like what was happening in terms of like, you know, oh, he's trying to sell me on becoming one of the people inside of this multi-level marketing scheme or whatever. Maybe he also knew that as well, but I feel like I put it on my shoulders to be like, to almost have like an intervention with this person on the phone while they were trying to ask me to do it. And I was like,
that is what you should do. Appropriate response. You did the right thing.
Okay. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad. Because I think the exact words that I said is, not only am I not going to do it, but I also think you should stop doing it.
Yeah. Yes. Accurate.
Oh, man. Accurate. But I always felt bad about that. You know, like that was like this rare moment in my life where I
helped a person.
Yeah. Yes. I never help people ever.
Nope.
As long as there's nothing in it for me, there's nothing in it for them. Does that make sense? Maybe not. That's also not true of my personality at all. No, it was, I don't know. I just thought it was strange because I realistically, I don't know the extent to which someone's position inside of one of these things is like endangering their livelihood. Like I just don't know that much about it because I've never really gotten that close to it. The biggest thing I've ever observed is that most people that I know that get into them do not stay inside of them for very long at all. Like it seems like you see somebody and they'll be like, hey, friends, want to have a party and come over and try out this new whatever? And then it's like, you know, 3 months later or whatever, you like check their Facebook page again or something. And they're like just started the new job at somewhere else.
Right.
Better Income Inc.
Sure.
Yeah. Other than that, I believe that one of our friends bought into like a power bar scheme or something once upon a time.
Yeah. We don't want your power bars. Don't want your makeup or your essential oils or your knives or your leggings. Whatever it is.
Whatever it is. Well, so anyway, this particular friend of ours that got into it, I believe that like there ended up being like a class action lawsuit.
Of course there was.
And what he received in exchange for having like bought in to the program or whatever was like a huge stack of these like protein bars and energy drinks. Like they like, I don't know if like they just had tons of product and no cash left after this lawsuit, but literally I think they called him and they were like, we could either send you $75 or like four crates of our mega oatmeal crunch,
right?
You know, protein bars and some grape fizzy electrolyte sunshine rainbow cans or something.
Right.
So he went with that. And I feel like every time I would go over there, I was actually helping him dig a pond at the time. And that was usually our nourishment
that
throughout
was your
the day.
Nourishment.
It was like, man, should we get some of those protein bars?
Yeah, and I got these like four giant boxes of this stuff.
Right. I've been digging earth for hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
By hand, actually. It was exhausting.
Yeah. Does it bother you now that like how much faster would that have gone if you had like rented some sort of digger when you were digging that pond.
Oh, going to the pond. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. So I had lost your
new track. Ben's digging a pond with our bud.
Whoa!
By hand. If I recall, this took roughly 3 weekend mornings worth of your time, where you would wake up at about
6 a.m.
and go over there and start just digging straight down into the center of the earth.
Yeah.
Until
the sun came up. This was like one of those weird things where my whole life, I've always liked digging holes. Mm-hmm. Like even the book Holes, where they like, that was like what they had to do every day. I was kind of like, sounds like a great camp to me. Like,
sign punishment.
I know.
Where?
I feel like your hands would get really strong. You probably get some fantastic traps and back muscles. Like,
dude, that is the most unrealistic thing about the movie Holes, is that all the kids are real scrawny. And it's like, I am afraid not, friend.
Oh, yeah.
You were digging a 5-foot by 5-foot hole on the daily, you would be jacked.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I remember there was following up, it would have gone, we could have done it in like 2.5 hours with a digger is the answer to the question.
Right.
Would have cost like $300 to rent it. We had a truck. We could have even moved it. Wouldn't have been a problem. But it was like such a bonding experience. This is such a thing about doing projects like that where there's like literal blood, sweat, tears that go into it. Mm-hmm. Is that like it to this day is probably the most significant like memory that me and that friend have together, where
right.
it's like this just really big project that we spent so much of our time thinking about doing, executing.
Right.
And it's still a really cool koi bond to this day. So
they have maintained it.
Yeah. Oh, so I remember though, there was a period of time, speaking of digging holes, where our mom works for the local SPCA.
Yeah.
And occasionally there's this kind of sad thing that happens where one of the pets, like, you know, will pass away.
Right.
And they actually have like a cemetery that like a local donor had given as like a place for pets to go. And like, actually, you could actually go and bury your pet there if you chose to. And it would be like a local just pet cemetery. And mom did not know who to get to dig the holes for the graves.
Oh, so I see where this is going.
And so she was like, Ben, you like to dig holes. So,
do I have a job for you?
Yes. So there was this like period of time where it was just like in the back of my truck, I just had all of my digging tools, which was all hand-based digging tools.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just constantly going out and digging holes in the pet cemetery. And goodness gracious, I was getting like ripped from doing it.
Yeah.
I remember one day I had a friend come and help me. And I was sweating profusely because it was like a 90-degree day, 2:00 in the afternoon. So I took my shirt off and my friend was just literally like, good golly gosh, like, what happened to you? And I was like, I don't know. And it was like this thing that had happened sort of secondary to me realizing it.
Right.
But apparently I had gotten like very in shape.
There you go.
Through the process of just digging.
Yeah. Well, I always think of hole digging as muscle building because of the show Survivor. And I believe have watched through a good portion of the show.
I have seen from like season 24 to like maybe season 36.
Okay.
So somewhere in there.
So yeah. I don't know. Did you ever come across James?
You would
remember.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, he probably comes on the show 3 times or so. I think between like probably seasons 15 and 23 then.
Okay. Gotcha.
And his profession is as a gravedigger.
A manual gravedigger.
I'm not sure what cemetery he works at, but oh my gosh, I've never seen like a bigger person.
Oh, really?
I mean, just enormous. He's also, I don't want to like spoil it, I'm going to spoil it for you, famously was voted out with 2 idols in his pocket.
Oh!
Felt so confident. Backstabbed. Anyway, sorry, James.
That's a bummer. In case you're listening, James, out there, we're very impressed with your physique, though. Great work on digging holes.
Dude. Really great work, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and on Survivor.
But that too. But yeah, I don't know. Digging holes, strange thing. Do you remember actually the time that we were kids and we went out into the front, the garden, I guess. It was in our backyard. I almost said front yard. And we just started digging this hole in this garden. And it was kind of like something that I feel like we spent like maybe 2 to 3 days doing. It never got really deeper than like maybe a 5-gallon bucket. But
okay.
For, you know, I think Mew and I were like maybe 6 and 8 at at the time or something, so we didn't have a whole lot of muscles,
right,
you know, to back us up. I remember, first off, that we were digging, and the thing that I was convinced we were going to find was the vault that contained all of the actual Star Wars items that ever existed.
Wow, that's yes. quite some headcanon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I was like, we don't know what's underneath this Earth, and there's a strong possibility it's lightsabers.
What reasoning from a 6-year-old?
What reasoning? But yeah. I feel like we were so into Star Wars, and
we were.
I feel like I remember, and I don't know if you'd remember this or not. We were laying in bed one night after we started digging this hole, and we were like claiming the things that we were going to keep when we found them.
This was a particular pastime of us as kids. I don't know if you continue your story.
Oh, all I remember is literally like you and I shared a bedroom still at this point in our lives. And I feel like I remember laying there at night and being like, man, Millennium Falcon dibs. And it was like, you know, it was like as if literally inside of this vault was going to be the actual Millennium Falcon. And because I had just called dibs, like, I get to have it now. And so it was like, you know, you had to like think of literally every single potential object from the Star Wars universe.
Right.
And we needed to lay dibs so that when we found it, we knew who got what.
Right, there wouldn't be bickering or anything.
Right,
right. We determined it. You know, we had a contract.
We had a contract. Yeah, we took our turn. So it was like, you know, I get Luke's green lightsaber, you get his blue lightsaber.
Yeah.
Like, fair is fair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I remember this particular form of dibsing things where we would like rotate around in a circle, like dibs on things not owned yet.
Oh, yeah. Dibs on things not owned yet.
Dibs
but like when opportunity
owned.
Was available, I have called preemptive
dibs.
Yeah.
Right. I remember, I know this was just the sort of behavior we would partake in all the time. I remember one time we were driving back, I think from New York, and for some reason, somehow, we had acquired this giant chart of all existing in production Beanie Babies, which of course, as a child of the 90s, we were into.
Obviously.
And it was like,
obviously.
The activity on the way home was that we were just, me and you and Ty were passing it around, and it was like, you would just circle, like, okay, when the opportunity comes, because we'll obviously own all of these at some point, I'm dibsing. This is I get this one.
Yeah.
You remember this?
I do remember this. I do remember this.
I'm so glad this wasn't just like some stupid thing I remembered.
No. Okay. This was such a thing. Like the attachment to the Beanie Babies was like massive, massive. Like
right.
I have so many memories attached to my like ongoing obsession with my collection of them.
Yeah.
Which I think we talked about this on the pop before, but once upon a time, our dad found like a box of like his childhood Hot Wheels toys. And as like a news broadcaster, when eBay was like becoming a thing, he sold like 5 of them online for like $900. And he used the money to buy our family canoe.
A canoe!
Which we still have, the Winona.
That Ben did not almost totally wreck on a trip
down
the river.
I did wreck all the sleeping bags.
Yeah,
they all went in the water and weighed like 400 pounds mm-hmm. once they were sopping wet. I think that number goes up every time I tell this story. So at this exact same period of time, Beanie Babies are becoming like this massive, like global phenomenon.
Right.
And the whole thing is like almost, I would almost argue if you were to go into like the Thai Beanie Baby story, there is almost like an article that came out that said that these things were going to be super valuable, and like it caught fire that led to the entire Beanie Baby craze.
Oh, my theory on this exact thing, because is that eBay became a thing.
Yeah, well, so maybe that's it. Simultaneously, all of a sudden, collectibles.
Right.
Yeah.
So at once, eBay came into existence, and everyone who had collectibles or who was in search of collectibles could suddenly buy them. And like, finally, even like if you had been a kid and were like, I'm saving this because one day I'm going to sell it. The problem is, up until eBay, your odds of finding a purchaser were so limited.
Right. Like, who are you going to sell it to?
Who are you going to sell it to?
Rocky Mount, Virginia.
Right. Yeah. You got to be going to a convention, which means travel and paying for the booth, which means whatever you're selling's got to be worth more than all of the cost of selling it.
Right.
Which is not high, or which is probably high. So finally, collectibles had the value they had been assigned, and people were cashing in on it, and people were starting to wonder, what is the collectible right now? This is my theory.
Yeah.
What is the hot collectible right now? And the answer was Beanie Babies, and there was this like weird mix, and everyone was like, gotta get all the Beanie Babies because they're gonna be worth something. Which of course, because everyone thought that, now they're not.
Yeah, now it's like you go on eBay and it's like buy like a 200 lot for like $100, and it's like, please get this out of my basement because it's taking up my Rubbermaid space.
It felt like the act of collecting Beanie Babies for the sake of selling them later really ruined the fun of Beanie Babies. Because everyone we had had this like horrible plastic heart shaped, you know what I'm talking about? Like plastic container around the tag, because the tag is what you had to keep intact.
The tag needed to be in mint condition. Mint. Yes. Like I remember like one of the big things that happened was before the Thai Beanie Baby craze, Tyler, 1 year, our younger brother, in his stocking, because like the little tag said Thai.
Yeah.
I think mom and dad were like, oh, that's so perfect. Like, let's get him this small like tie-dyed bear.
Yeah.
And it was like the Garcia bear, which I think like ended up being one of the like sort of perceived high value ones.
Right.
But Tyler treated it the way that you should treat toys, in that it was an actual teddy bear for him.
Right.
So like, you know, he carried it with him everywhere, and it was like, as you would expect for any child's toy, disgusting.
Yeah.
Over a period of time, the tag was long gone.
Long gone.
Like disintegrated.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember that there was always this, like, I would like stare at this bear sometimes and just be like, we lost all the value.
like you as like a 8-year-old child are just like lamenting and like,
yes,
being like stressing out over the lost perceived value of future Garcia bear.
Genuinely preoccupied by this. Like, I think it like kept me awake at night.
Oh my gosh.
Because it was just like, no. But like, you know, so many things. I think we had all these like bizarre memories attached to these Thai Beanie Baby bears. Like, I remember the very first thing that we ever bought, and this was another one for me, on eBay, was like, our whole family had this like little computer room at the top of the stairs with the pink carpet. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You remember the spot? We lived there for 10 years.
I remember the pink carpet at the old house.
It was like bubblegum pink, literally.
It was, yes.
Yeah.
It was a bold choice by somebody at some point.
Someone.
I don't think that was our parents. I think they inherited the pink carpet.
Though, to be fair, they never changed it.
Well, they did take it off the stairs.
Good point. Yeah. Yes.
The stairs also used to be hot pink.
So we're into the Beanie Baby craze at this point. eBay's a thing. And I remember one night, mom and dad are like on board with the idea of like bidding on the Canada bear. I think its name is Maple.
Oh, yeah. You think. You know for sure.
Okay. I know for sure.
Like, let me just, yeah.
I'm gonna lob it out there. You know, I mean, maybe it's called Maple. Who knows?
Was it? That's a good Canada word probably for a bear.
Yeah. So anyway, mom and dad end up like, it was, I feel like it was nearing Christmas or something. So it was this thing. So like, we're all bidding on it. It's like this total thing or whatever. And they ultimately won it and they gave it to me for Christmas. I think they paid like $75 for it. Like,
my goodness.
They like went for it. I feel like it was unusual.
I recall as kids, Canada was like this magical place. I don't know why I'm laughing. But because our dad would like go on these fishing trips.
Yes.
And it was just like going to Canada. And like, that's all. I knew nothing about Canada except that dad went on fishing trips there and that their flag was red with a maple leaf. But I knew literally nothing about it other than that.
It's a really cool flag.
Yeah. It's a good flag. It's a very good flag.
Yeah.
It's on the Beanie Baby maple.
Yes.
And so I think we were just like, yeah, Canada. Everything about Canada is great. And this is the Canada tie Beanie Baby bear. Gotta have it.
It's so true. It's not, I don't think I could have realized this thought until like going back, but I feel like at some point in time there became like How I Met Your Mother makes such jokes about Canada.
Right.
But like, I feel like whenever this, like, you know, I would feel like generally lighthearted joking that is directed at Canada started happening. I feel like I was caught off guard by it. Like, why would we make fun of Canada?
Yeah. You guys know our dad goes on fishing trips though, right?
Like three times.
Yeah. Like, okay.
He flew in on a seaplane. Like, the things attached to these fishing trips were like, literally, yeah, it was like, this is what you do when you become an adult. You fly to Canada and you see a moose and you jump
carry
in the really
canoe around the wilderness.
Yes, you like portage, like you carry it with like all of your gear. You like, yeah, jump into freezing cold water. You catch all the northern pikes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was like, this is just what the future is made of.
This is what it's all about.
But so anyway, we got Maple. And I believe to this day is still worth nothing. I think mom and dad probably bought it at like its premium price.
That's the thing, is that if you were really savvy, you were selling those Beanie Babies at the time.
Exactly. It's like the exact opposite of any investment, where normally the idea is to like, you know, wait and let it like, you know, gain value over the course of your life.
I'm going to go on eBay right now.
You're going to
figure out what the going rate for a Maple Thai Beanie Baby is.
Okay, let's do it. Okay. See, this is the Maple. Other thing too, though, because I feel like there became this entire like BuzzFeed thing that started happening where they were like, 10 of your childhood toys that might be worth a fortune today. That's my Buzzy Bee voice.
That's your Buzzy Bee voice.
But Here is the thing about eBay assigning values to things is that, like, I would be willing to bet that if you looked it up, it might say like $8,999 for this Thai maple beanie baby bear. But it's like no one ever buys it. It's like someone is attempting to give value to a product by selling it for such an absurd price.
So the thing that's actually coming up is this like mini bear rather than the big bear.
Is it the one from McDonald's? Remember when they were Happy Meal toys?
Yeah, the Ronald McDonald.
Yeah.
In the kiss. That's the one that's coming up. I found one out of the box one that looks like $5. And indeed, someone's trying to sell a packaged tiny bear for $3,000.
Yes.
They ain't gonna get.
I
hope not.
This is the thing that happened. Yeah, is that like they're literally worth nothing. There's no one out there that I'm aware of. I would want to know, is there anyone in the listening audience that is like actively still collecting Thai Beanie Babies?
Well, it felt like when they came out, there was like a first set or something where there was like you could. There maybe like 60 different ones existed.
Right.
Like different, you know, animals you could get. And nowadays, the number of products produced by like the TY...
Bear Company.
Bear, whatever it is bazillions.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. Like, this is the phenomenon that happened, is that like going through like the 50s, 60s or whatever, when they started like, you know, making toys, they were still not quite at the point where they were like being mass produced.
Yeah.
So there were like some of them, which meant that like if they survived, because tons of kids played, you know, bought them, played with them, treated them as toys. But occasionally there was that person who must have just like kept it in the box in their attic forever. And then the nostalgia value was massive because maybe they made 5,000 of them, but there's like 10 of them left in the world still in the box. That makes it valuable because it's like, whoa, there's still like something made in the 1950s that there weren't that many of, and there's still a new one.
Right.
Fast forward to the Thai Beanie Babers. The Beanie Baber Company.
The Beanie Babers.
I'm sticking with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I think that this is the story that came out, though, is that once upon a time they were creating the Thai Beanie Babies in like a garage, and they were like, you know, hand sewn and like all this stuff, and like there was something really special because they were like this.
Is that accurate, or are you just imagining it?
I think it's accurate. I'm imagining some version of it.
Okay.
But I don't know that I'm completely wrong. Stick with me.
Okay.
This is the kind of host you get here, is memory-ish kind of information.
Right.
I believe what happened was all of the Beanie Babies that were made inside of like that garage are genuinely valuable because they are like the artifacts that ultimately went on to create what everybody else knows as this huge commercialized success, as this like perceived hyper collectible plush toy.
Right.
And so the ones that like that continue to exist as the ignition point for that have those imperfections that make it like that much more perfect somehow, you know, like that is what I think goes on to this day to be like the actual collectibles.
I see. Yeah,
of the world.
That's the thing. Yeah, misprints on early things are make for great, really valuable things.
Oh, I have always thought this was fascinating. Yeah, like the mistakes are what make things valuable because there are so few that may have had mistakes.
Exactly.
And this was something, I think we've talked about this a little bit before, but like when we collected Hot Wheels, you know, you were looking for a different set of wheels on a specific car.
We used to collect first edition Hot Wheels, and every year there'd be like, these are the 1997 first editions, and there'd be like, you know, 43 different ones or whatever.
Right.
And every now and then you could find like number 21, you could like look at two identical blister packs, and you know, they would have the same car but different wheels.
Yes.
And it was all interesting because I never perceived those as mistakes. It seemed to me like Hot Wheels was purposefully printing or like produce, not printing, they're printing cars. Maybe they are. I don't know. They were like purposefully putting out the common one and the rare one into the world because we would have like printouts that would be like, okay, this is the car and these are the variables available. It wasn't like they were known.
Right.
You know,
and that was the bizarre thing about it. So yeah, you could have a Hot Wheels car that had like a 5-spoke wheel or like a star pattern. And you're exactly right. I remember we literally would have like these sheets that we would keep next to like the board that we would drop all the Hot Wheels into. And we would like highlight as we found things.
Man, but we were cool.
We were so cool. And like we would go to Walmart, and I have no idea how mom and dad were so patient with this thing that would happen. But like every time we went to Walmart or the store, like we would have to go through every single rack and it would be like, okay, this is the number 21 car from the 1997 first edition. Oh, but it's a 5-spoke. Okay, we don't want that one.
Already got
and, like,
that one.
We already got that one. Mm-hmm. But like it made it so fun every time you found.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things, and we found a lot of them. So, like, if you see our Hot Wheels wall in our basement at our parents' house, like, you could find, like, you know, we have 4 number 3 cars because they all had slightly different little details about them.
Yeah.
And I feel like one of them, you know, is worth like $7 and the other ones are like literally worth less than what you paid.
Okay. Speaking of old Hot Wheels collectibles, I went, maybe I've already talked about this on the pop, but, you know, mom and dad have done that total parent thing where they try and offload all of your old stuff to you as an adult.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I've just got like boxes of old like toys from our childhood in our basement, including all of our Beanie Babies in case you want to go through memory lane.
The Princess Di Bear still in there?
Probably.
Purple with a little flower, maybe?
I don't know. Mom might have kept that one. That was always her favorite.
I know.
Yeah. I remember that. I haven't really opened it to go. I always have this problem. I'm like, hey, it might be fun to go like look at all these things, but I can, one, it's hard to move around in this storage room of mine, but two, I am petrified that my son Luke is going to find this giant box of stuffed animals.
Oh, yes.
Of like plush Beanie Baby toys and is going to like all of a sudden, that's it. You know, there's no putting them back in the box after that. I'm just going to have 80 Beanie Babies living out in the wild of my house all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know, can't have it.
Can't have it.
Can't. No, that box can't open right now.
Should we just take all of them and like do professional shoots here in our Super Carlin Brothers like YouTube office and like try to sell them on eBay and
we should autograph them with Sharpie on the animal itself.
On the animal
itself.
We
will add the value. Yes,
it's like the Super Carlin Brothers edition Beanie Baby
that's
Bears.
Right,
yes.
Exactly.
But nobody's getting Maple.
No one's getting Maple. Not for anything less than $3,000.
Like, I feel like 10 years from now, you're going to like, we'll do this whole gag. It'll be hilarious and amazing. We'll become rich and wealthy. You'll come over to my house one day, walk into my bedroom, and in front of all my throw pillows is going to be Maple sitting in front, you know, like on my bed.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, that's where Maple stays.
That's where Maple.
Because funny. I love Canada.
It's funny. It's funny to me that years later, like, you still do find, like, if someone walked up to you, like, imagine I do give you the Maple Bear back, and you, like, put it on your, like, it's just sitting, like, in your living room or something, and someone came over and was like, oh my gosh, I could never find this. I will give you $100 for it. I feel like you would still be like, I can't do it.
It's so true. It's like, no.
No.
No. Maple?
Which is so weird because, like, it has existed outside of your life forever. It's like, it's not bringing you joy, or is it?
Maybe it is.
Maybe it is. Is it bringing you joy just knowing that you have it?
Maybe there's like a strange, like, tendril that goes back, you know, like from like my, like, the purest kind of nostalgia that exists inside of me.
Yeah.
And it goes back to that moment on our bubblegum carpet when we bought it. And it's just like, I can't imagine. It would feel like I would be severing myself from that memory forever.
Oh, wow. Wow. What a, like, vivid picture.
I know.
Okay. I think I'm going to bring this to the present then.
Okay.
I think I forgot to finish my Hot Wheels story. And we had a bunch of Hot Wheels that we too assumed were going to be valuable someday as kids.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. And there's just a box of them. I went down one, like when Luke started getting into them, I opened all of them.
No way.
I opened all of them. It was amazing. It was the best feeling ever. Yeah,
just pure glory.
I was just like, oh, these are so worthless. I'm opening all of them.
Yeah.
It was great. Anyway, but bring it to the present about do you get joy just from having a thing, even if you aren't able to really use it or like whatever?
Okay. So is that the end of your question?
Oh no, I have an example.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay. Yes.
So at the moment before quarantine, you recall, I think we talked about it on the pop about the idea of opening like a whole box of booster Pokemon cards.
Yes.
Yes. And one day I went out and I bought a box and we opened them on the gaming channel.
Yes, we did.
Which was fun. After that, I think we found like, we had bought a bunch of Magic the Gathering cards once upon a time in the office.
We did.
Intending to sell them. We go down this road a lot.
I know. Man. We are like the biggest suckers on the entire planet for the idea of buying and finding rare things that we can then sell for big fortune.
Right. Anyway, that didn't go anywhere, but we were like, you know what? We had fun opening the first box. Let's take all those magic cards, take them down to the card shop. We'll just whatever the value is, we'll put it towards a second box.
Yeah.
And we got like, we got a second box of Pokemon cards. And then last week in the mail, someone sent us a third box.
A third box!
Of just like tons. So this is like, first of all, if mom and dad had given me a full unopened box of booster Pokemon cards when I was a kid, it would have like, it would have blown my mind.
Yes.
It would have been the best gift they could have given me.
Absolutely. By a mile. I mean, yeah, like those original Pokemon booster packs, like, they were so perfect.
They were so perfect. But so anyway, upon receiving the third box, it occurred to me that like, man, I've got kind of a lot of cards all of a sudden just laying around.
Yeah.
So I went through and I was just like, okay, I picked up what looked like the rarest one. I just did like a search for it to see like one, what was it worth, of course.
Naturally.
But this like deck list pops up and I'm like, okay. I used to play a lot of like Yu-Gi-Oh! I did some trading card game stuff.
Yeah.
I like playing the Pokemon card games. Like I'm going to make this deck. I'm going to make this into a reality in my real adult life. I'm going to own these 60 cards in a stack.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, yeah. Like the hunt begins.
The hunt begins. I was already sorry about, you know, maybe, you know, 25 out of the 60 there based on what I'd pulled already.
Not bad.
Great start. And what I've discovered is that it's really easy to collect cards as an adult because you have money.
It does. Yeah. That adds up.
Yeah.
That adds up.
That adds up. But it occurs to me that, like, as I'm doing it, even though it's, like, not that much money or anything, but even as I'm spending, like, $20, like, trying to fill out the rest of this deck, I'm like, what am I going to do with it? You know, like, what, like, once I have the whole deck assembled, what am I going to do with it?
It's the chase, Jay.
I know it's the chase. It's like, at the same time, it's like, because I have 3 children.
Yeah.
Like, they're very young. I don't have, like, free time to go play against other people in the real world.
Right.
Or anything. I don't even have other people I know who play the game.
See, okay.
You know what I mean? But
I know.
But the act of getting these things and assembling this has been so much fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I get that completely. Like, I think that so frequently in my mind, like, I'm always trying to manipulate circumstances so that there is always as much opportunity as I could possibly want in order to be able to do the things that I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the famous example for me was in college. I really wanted to be able to snowboard whenever I wanted. And so I attempted to build a snow machine using, like, an air compressor and a bunch of galvanized pipes so that it would, like, blow water over the yard. Like,
yeah, and water vapor and cold, dry air, and it would...
Yeah, and it would freeze
on its way down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So like, that's, I feel like what you have to do, that's what you have to think about is like, Jay, what is your snow machine here? How do you find a way to ensure that no matter what, you always have a way to play Pokemon cards?
Well, the good news is there's an online version which you can play, which is the way you can actually play against other people.
That feels like a very non-creative solution to this problem.
Well, the problem is that it's not like a direct correlation. It's not like what you got in this pack is what you got in here.
Right.
So it's not as if you can just like recreate card for card what you have, unless you do a lot of trading inside the online system or whatever.
Yep.
But it's, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I am having a whole lot of fun tracking the cards down and assembling them. And like, I have like little packages arriving in the mail and it's like, well, it's so fun. I get to put in like two or three more.
Right. And it's like, small amounts of money too. So it's like, you can collectively spend $100, but like spread that out over, you know, 20 individual purchases,
right?
And then you have 20 pieces of mail that arrive.
It's
like, there's nothing
better. Who
doesn't love mail?
So, also, I've had to go to eBay for some of it. And have you bid on anything on eBay recently? Are you an eBay person?
I am an eBay person because I like to find rare things, like my current Mickey Mouse Vans that I'm wearing.
Very fun.
I got on the old Ebes. And so typically I do actually think that I use eBay. Like, some people I think can use eBay like Amazon. Like, you could go and just buy things and there's a buy it now feature.
Oh,
and
there,
like,
is the buy it now feature.
Right.
Yeah.
Which to me is like, it's great under certain occasions where it's like, okay, I don't want to bid for this. I just want to be able to ensure that I get it, which is what I did with these shoes. But I do feel like typically I am looking for actual collectibles on eBay.
Okay.
But I would say it is rare that I found myself super engaged in like a bidding war for something.
Okay.
Usually I do like the make an offer thing, and that tends to work reasonably well for me.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
I see. Yeah. So in my quest for my Pokemon cards, I wasn't recently in a bidding war eBay.
How'd it go?
Oh, well, it started out, I looked it up, and the cards in question, I think I think it was about a $55 value, which I was like, I don't really want to spend that much because it was like three cards.
Sure.
Yeah. But I found it on eBay and it's like, oh, $7. I was like, okay, all right. This seems very reasonable.
Yes.
No big deal. Then I made like a max bid and like quickly came back the next day and it like up to like $36. And I was like, oh, okay. But it was still like 5 days away from ending, which was just torture because every single day I would open it and be like, well, who knows? But it was like also really fun every day being like, all right, gosh, I don't know what's gonna happen. What if someone's like just waiting till the last second?
Right.
You know, you don't know. And then like you can see, it shows you how many bids have been made.
Right.
So to me, I realized that like, okay, it's still at 36 and it says 13 bids. If I increase my max bid, it'll then say 14 bids, but the price won't have changed. So if someone's watching, they'll know I have increased my max bid.
Oh my gosh.
And that means they'll know they need to bid higher at the last second.
Your strategy brain is infuriating. Oh. This is why no one can beat you at board games.
Well, I mean, I have people to play board games with though.
I guess so. Okay. Anyway.
I don't know.
So, but okay. So interesting. So you increased your max bid.
Oh, well, so this was my dilemma. I was like, it's been sitting here for like 4 days and no one has like made any changes on it, but there's been 13 bids, so clearly somebody's watching.
Right.
It's like, if I change the max bid without the number going up, people are gonna know what happened. So I came down to like the last like 30 seconds of it. Finally, the day arrives and I am like, I have indeed increased the max bid. I went for it and I'm just sitting there refreshing like, oh, someone's gonna totally do it. And within the last 15 seconds, the price did go up.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, they wouldn't have beat my initial max bid either.
Okay.
But it did go up. Someone was watching. So I was like, oh, it was like this moment of like, oh, I was so validated. I was almost happy that it did go up, even though I had to pay a little bit more.
Right.
But I was like, oh, that's right. How dare you?
That is the thing, though. It's such a roller coaster. Like, I feel like these auctions can become so addictive.
Yeah.
For this exact reason, because you become so invested. And then the more enjoyment that you've had in the process of purchasing this thing, the more that it also like even validates the spend on it. Because at some point in time, I feel like the movie theater principle comes into effect.
Yeah.
Which is this idea that I came up with, I think, when I was like 16 or something, which is basically that like, if you were to go to the movies, you're pretty regularly willing to spend like $10 to $12 for 2 hours of entertainment, but then you leave and the movie is over.
Right.
And so it's like, if you can spend $10 to $12 and receive at least 2 hours worth of entertainment from that $10 to $12, then basically that's like, in my mind, the going rate for that amount of entertainment.
Yeah.
And so I feel like from your perspective, you know, you start looking at this and it's like, it's something you're thinking about. It's something that makes you excited. It's something you're checking into. Ultimately you won. It's like all of those. Crushing disappointment. Actually, you would never want to bid against me in something like this, because when I do bid on eBay, I sort my auctions ending soonest.
Yeah.
And I will not make a move or let any amount of my card show until the very last second.
Oh, I see.
And so I would be sitting there and like, I will like wait to even make my first bid for there to be like 20 seconds left.
So then the problem is you're probably spending more money though, because then it means when you go to bid, you have to try and make sure you're definitely going to beat their max bid.
True. And I think that that's where,
which is an unknown variable.
It is. And I think that I have the advantage of not having had the day's worth of commitment to like tuning into it, where like basically I have like my predetermined, like if it goes over $30, then it is beyond the value that I was willing to pay for it anyway.
But then why not make that the hidden max bid just from the start? Put the burden on someone else to outguess you.
Well, I suppose because if you have that max bid set and they start bidding, then you will auto outbid them over and over.
Yeah.
Which means like if it's at $7 from the beginning, my hope would almost be to allow the person who has the max bid at $7 to think they have it at $7 for as long as possible. And then I guess my argument would be that by coming in at the last second, if I could just bid like more, like $20 all of a sudden, then that would win. Does that make sense?
Not if their max bid is 30.
Well, if their max bid is 30,
yeah.
I guess. But then, I guess you don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. So you're a last second show up at the table, and I'm like a front runner person. Like, I want to be in command the whole time.
Right. Yeah. I think that's exactly right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We have opposing styles of bidding.
Yes.
Which is interesting, because often you and I will go to nonprofit events and there will be auctions and we will be like bidding on stuff together.
I know. It is really interesting. This is, I feel like you and I, like, so we go, our parents are like pretty involved with, it seems like such a myriad of like nonprofit things. And so very frequently they're like, hey, will you guys come to our event? And I think it's because at this point they're like, because you guys will bid on stuff and it's fun to watch. I think they're using us for entertainment value. But usually, yeah, you and I have like a strategy walking into, it's like, okay, how are we going to go here? But I will say the thing that I think we have provided to the Roanoke Valley is that we have bid some stuff up in a way that has made it so that we didn't win, but someone else paid more for it.
That's what they want to happen, of course.
That is what they want to happen. Yeah. And I think with the exception of my trip to Africa, which I put the minimum bid on and then won, I think that we've done some good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just patting myself on the back for no reason, but
No.
Moral of the story, auctions are a blast.
Auctions are fun.
Okay, so I need to tell you about my first ever auction experience while we're discussing, because this is a Ben Carlin childhood memory that just like was so miserable.
Okay, let me just say, in case anyone's curious, the card I was bidding on was called, it was a secret rare Dragapult V Max, in case people are just like, why didn't you tell us what it was?
I gotta know.
Yeah, because I've been teasing you or something. That's the card. That was the card in question.
Okay. Is it gorgeous?
Yeah. It was three. So there's the secret rare one, which is this awesome full art rainbow thing. Then there was a second one that was not secret rare. And then a third one, which was like just the V, not the V Max.
Okay.
So that one was only worth like five. The other two were worth about 20 and 30.
I wish we were closer to Christmas so that I could start attempting to find Christmas gifts for you, because I feel like it would just be so much fun to just go and find like all these little things and just be like, oh yes,
Ben, there's no need to wait.
One of my love languages is gift giving, at least in the way that I give love. So I feel like your interest in Pokemon fuels me.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes. So
anyway, what was your first auction?
My first auction experience.
Yeah.
Let me go back. So I think it was in fourth or fifth grade. We had the accelerated reader program.
Okay.
Do you remember that? Like where you would go to the library, you would like pick a book and you would read it, and you could take a quiz on the book to like prove that you retained knowledge from it. And then based on the difficulty of the book and how many answers you got correct, you were awarded like a certain value of points that you could then like store, I guess, like they would keep track of. So you would like, the teachers I think would be able to determine who was reading a lot of books based on like whatever your score was,
or so they would think.
Why do you say that?
Well, this is not something I invented, but there was one of my friends in class who, we also had the accelerated reader program, realized that there was no penalty against your point total for like failing a quiz or something.
Oh, interesting.
You know, like you could, it wasn't like, oh, like, so he would just go on there and find, he would take like 20 quizzes on books
that he had never read.
Never read and never intended to read, knew he would never read.
So he'd get like 3 out of 4 correct,
right,
or 3 out of 10 correct. And
right.
Then
you just like nickel and diming the score. Yeah, you can guess 25%.
Yeah.
Right? So that's what he would do. And sure enough, his score, you know, it didn't matter that he was failing, because the goal was the overall point total.
The point total.
The point total is all that matter, not the success rate, not the pass rate or anything.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, so that was his strategy. And pretty much always had the highest point total in the class.
Wow.
I know.
Well,
sneaky, right?
That is sneaky.
It's really, it's like, part of me is like, what a cheater. And also kind of just like, that was really creative for like a fourth grader.
I know. Yeah. To be like, you know what I can do here?
Right.
I can beat the system.
No one's checking if you read the book.
Right. Yeah. Oh my God, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so it seemed like year after year, as a pretty consistent idea, they would have methods of attempting to get you to read more books and then take more quizzes. And then there was like awards. So I think like one year they had this thing where you got to like fill up your like bar on like the door to the classroom or something. And it was like, once you hit 10 points, you got to fill up to 10. And then that meant you got to go to this like accelerated reader sponsored day of fun in the sun or whatever, and however many points you got allowed you to go like 1 hour earlier or something. So if you hit like 50 points, then you got to go do the whole day. I know, amazing. Totally went the whole day, no problem. But by my fourth or fifth grade year, they had invented this idea to do an auction.
Yeah.
And so basically the number of points that you earned was your currency that you were able to then go to like a rec center somewhere with kids from all over who also had earned points.
I see.
And they, like, parents and stuff were like offering prizes, and you know, you could then like bid using your points on like a boom boombox or something like that. You know, right. They had varying degrees of
awesome
quality.
Awesome third grade prizes.
Awesome third grade prizes. Yeah, nothing super spectacular, but like some of the stuff was pretty cool. But our school, for whatever reason, it's like there was no regulation as to how much these like books were worth. So I had read like 35 books or something, which had scored me just enough to go to the event, which was 75 points.
Okay.
Actually, I think my total ended up being like 84 or something like that. Okay. So I just barely tipped the scale. I was the only kid from my school who got to go.
In the whole school. Wow. So you're the top reader in the school. And you're thinking, wow, what is it going to be like? 5 kids here from other schools?
Yeah. No, tons of kids.
Right.
We get there, and what I learn is that like, for whatever reason, our school system was awarding me like 1 to 2 points like per book.
Right.
Like pretty modest. And then I get there, and like they didn't even have the Harry Potter books at all. They were not listed as like quizzable books you could take.
Sure.
So I get there, and kids from all these other schools were able to take all of the Harry Potter books that were available, which I think was up to Goblet of Fire, and they were worth like 40 points a piece.
Whoa.
Because they were like considered like big reads.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because they're like these meaty books and stuff. So as a kid, I had already read the Harry Potter books like 5-6 times a mm-hmm. piece or something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I was so into them. Yeah. But so these kids were showing up, and they were having like, you know, 200 to 400 points.
Right.
And I had my measly 84.
Right.
And so I remember like, you know, there was like, they got there and I had no idea that this was the case. So like they let you like walk through this like little outdoor picnic pavilion where they have all the prizes set up, and you know, like you get to sort of like choose like what you're going to bid on mm-hmm. and stuff. And they start going through the process. And so, you know, like a stereo goes up and I'm like, oh, like I'll bid on that. And then it gets bid to like 370 points or something. It's it's like, man, I had no shot.
Like, wow, how many you could read like 150 books?
Yeah. Yeah. And so our dad, again, local TV news anchor, had signed like a like Channel 10 ball cap.
Okay.
And so it was like a white Channel 10 ball cap that had like a John Carlin signature or whatever, which, you know, most fourth graders are not super privy to who that is.
Right. They don't care about the news.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's like the second to last item. I haven't been able to afford anything yet. And I end up buying dad's hat.
Oh, no. That is the worst. Oh no.
I think it went for 40 points and then I couldn't even spend the rest of them. The final item was a die-cast NASCAR, like, you know, like a, I don't know.
Like a car.
A car. Yeah.
Like a model car.
And that was the last thing, and I couldn't afford it with my remaining, you know, 43 points or whatever I had left.
So you're the top reader of the school, and you show up to this district-wide auction, and the only thing you can afford is a hat signed by your own dad.
That's exactly correct.
That has got to be the worst feeling.
It was. Like, it was like, I could not believe it. I could not, like, I was like, I need to talk to somebody because clearly there's been a mistake. Like, there's no way so many of these other kids, like, I had read a ton of books. Like, I was highly motivated by this prospect.
Right.
And so I was like, I remember I was like asking for like special notes to go to the library so I could check out bigger books. I was like going like a reading level above like whatever I was supposed mm-hmm. to be reading because that was worth 2 points instead of
like
1 point.
The system was working on you.
Yeah. And yeah. It was like, I was trying so hard, and all I got
and
out
reading
of it,
the Harry Potter books over.
Simultaneously
for funds.
Yeah. So I'm like, I look back on this period of time in my life and I'm like, man, I was like so duped.
It just sounds like, man, yeah, like the value of the currency at your school just wasn't as good.
How could it not be the same?
This is, how could it not be the same? That is like, they're like, you're like leaving like, well, this is a lesson in economics. You're like,
exactly.
Like, well, I'm in fifth grade and I read a bunch of books. So give me a boombox.
Please. That's all I wanted was a boombox.
Oh my gosh. It's like you were the best like soccer player in third grade and you showed up and you're like, I'm so proud to represent my team, and it turns out we're playing against the varsity high schoolers. And it's just like, well, okay.
I got knocked out a bunch. Yeah, no, it was so, so disappointing, and I don't know why it happened. I feel like this was like a running trend of things that seemed to happen to me. And
you had some weird experiences with your elementary school life.
I did. It was like this thing. I have always believed that I'm like on the Truman Show, which is like the Jim Carrey movie where he is like the center of everything, and like everybody is like creating this like universe around him and stuff, and they're all actors.
You think they're all really happy that you opted to do an on-camera job and like set up some of the cameras for them.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I know, it's right? Like,
gosh, how perfect.
This makes it so much easier.
Like, wow, he's sitting down for us.
I feel so bad for all the people who are just tuned in watching us record right now. Like, yeah, there's cameras obviously on me. They have to watch our entire episode. And then in order to have download data show up, other people also have to listen to the podcast. It's like, how do you listen to this?
Right.
Oh, man.
Gosh.
Must be so frustrating.
What I like to imagine when I imagine myself as the star of The Truman Show is like, I bet I would have to imagine that if something like The Truman Show existed, which is almost feels like we're like years away from really happening to someone, unfortunately, that what would really drive all of the, like what The Truman Show would do in the movie is like every now and then the characters would be like, this product, and they would do like an ad read to camera.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Which you also do for them without noticing. Man, crazy.
That's the reason they let me become a YouTuber.
That's right.
It's like we can literally make Ben do the advertisements. How funny is that?
Right? Exactly. Like, who better, like, it's great when, like, the other characters do the ad reads, but, like, for Ben, the main guy, to do them, wow, how smart were we to figure this out? Anyway, well, I don't think what would really fund the show is the advertising. I think what would fund the show is the gambling, and there would be, like, odds on what you were going to do every day, based on, like, all right, what's he gonna do? Like, what are the odds Ben brings his coffee to work in his car? Like, what are the odds Ben leaves his coffee in his car today? And people are like, oh, boy, he leaves it in there every single day. Oh, my gosh.
It's the day he does it?
It's like, I'm feeling lucky. I'm. You know what? He's bringing it. He's leaving it at the office. I'm going for the first, the second, and the third.
This is this thing, though, that I imagine I want to exist sometimes, like, where it's like someone somewhere has kept all the stats on everyone. So it's like, man, I feel like I take out the trash way more than everyone else. And it's like, I wish I could call it up and be like, hey, who takes out the trash the most? And it's like, bring! And it's like, you have taken it out 37 times more than the next person. And it's like, I knew it. Or like, what would you do if you like pulled it up and it's like, whoa, I don't take out the trash nearly enough.
Oh man, you know what would either highly motivate you or highly demotivate you then is a Peloton bike.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. Because you can, whatever workout you do, you can optionally turn on the leaderboard and it will show you in real time where you stack up against everyone who has ever done that ride.
Oh my gosh.
On the app. So you could, like, gone are the days where you're sitting there on the stationary bike thinking to yourself, like, man, I'm so good at the stationary bike. Like, no one, man, I wish I knew how other people performed. The answer is there. And I have news for you. You are not even close to the top.
Oh, no.
I'm pretty satisfied with my spots that I landed. To me, it's very motivating. I'm always like, because if it's like, you know, 20,000 people who've done the workout or something, if you're like in the 5,000s, it's like, yeah, this is really great.
Not bad.
Not feeling too bad at all. And you can, like, you know, then if you like put in an extra, you know, effort for 30 seconds, you can like see yourself climb. Oh, from the 5,400s to the 5,100s.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's fun. Can I break 5,000? I don't know. It's something to work for.
Let's do it.
Yeah, it's very, very motivating. But I think, If you're like more toward, I don't know how it would feel if you were like feeling like, I'm going so hard. And then you like turn on the leaderboard and you're like, oh God, I'm in like the 19,000s. Like, that could be rough.
Oh,
could be. I feel like I have to turn that off.
I know. Yeah, that would be. It's like, I don't need that information in my life.
I don't need that information. I don't need to know.
No, that's really interesting. That is really interesting. But this is the exact thing, though. Going back to the Truman Show, is I think my critical flaw as a human being must be fear that I will acquire overconfidence. That's what I'm forced to believe.
That's what you're forced to believe.
That's what I'm forced to believe. And so they can like let me feel special by being the top reader in my school.
Right.
But they can't let me feel special enough to think I'm the best reader in the district.
Ah,
you know,
right.
And that's like, that's what it comes down to. And this is exactly it. So if I got a Peloton bike, Jay, no matter what my goal was, it would be like, as soon as I got close, they would be like, wow, there was an import error and we didn't include 20,000 other cyclists.
Yeah.
turns out you were close to top 1,000. You are now, unfortunately, in the top 10,000. But great work. We're
still
so proud of you.
Those calories.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What it's all about.
This was the case. The very first half marathon I ever ran.
Yeah,
was the Rock and Roll Half Marathon in Virginia Beach. Mm-hmm. I was, I think, 13.
Okay,
and it was this. You know, you were actually supposed to do it with me.
I was.
Why didn't you?
I had some sort of surgery that I was recovering from.
Oh, and man.
Was unable to run.
Shucks darn.
Yes.
Well, I do remember that now. But I remember there was like this really big thing where I, there was like 19,000 people in the race or something. So legitimately going into it, I was like, there's no way I'll place. Like, this is like,
yeah,
that's laughable. Like, you know, we would do like local 5Ks and I wouldn't even be in the top three of my age group or whatever. Like, it wasn't like I was, you know, positioned for that or whatever. But I put a ton of effort into training. You and I both did. We were out doing like, you know, I think we got up to like a 10-mile run with Dad before we actually did the half marathon. I got there and I remember like our big goal was to run an 8-minute pace the whole time, which would land you at an hour and 45 minutes. They had like this little guy that like runs with like a stick and he's like trained. He's like really good at running, like specifically an hour and 45 minutes.
Exactly. He's gonna hit that mark.
It's actually, it has always to me been like one of the coolest things that big races do is that they supply people who literally tell you like, if you run next to me, you will run a 2-hour half marathon.
Right.
And it's like,
I will keep the pace.
And someone's so good at running that like speed that they can do it. I love it. Love it. Anyway, so I finished the race. And it was kind of like, you know, they give you your medal anyway, which is really cool. And it's like one of the fun, like most fun parts about doing one of these races.
Yeah.
Turns out, though, that I think my finishing time was like an hour and 44 minutes, and like 45 seconds. So just came under and I came in fourth.
Oh my God.
In my age group. And I was like, no!
Why couldn't I have finished 50th or something?
I know, and the kid who beat me by like nothing either.
Oh,
like
so
I
he think, was like there.
Like I could have like visibly he was in my like yeah.
Oh
like,
no. Well, maybe not, because the way those races start,
it's tiered.
So right. Yeah, he could have finished, you know, 10 minutes after you and 1 second ahead of you.
Right, right.
Yeah.
This is going to have to be like the other new segment, you know, that we invent and never follow up on.
Yeah.
Is times Ben almost was remarkable.
Welcome to the Ben's tragic life.
You already know because you've been watching it unfold my whole life.
Yeah.
If someone out there is able to let me know if that's true, just leave me a message.
Yeah.
You know?
And just let, also make sure you let Ben know that you have taken out the garbage like 1,000 more times than him.
Please, just let me know. How many times have you done it? More than me? For sure.
Is garbage, is one of the things I do at our house.
Oh yeah. 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 There is a TikTok right now going around that is so spot on, but it is like someone's significant other is like, hey, would you mind taking out the trash? And the other person's like, yeah, just 1 second. And then like they literally take 1 second, and then the other person's in the kitchen like shaking the bag, being like, I'll just do it myself. Except usually Allie will say that, and then I'll like stop what I'm doing promptly and go and take out the trash. But it's one of those that hits home so hard.
Okay.
I'm like, oh, I get that so much. Never enough patience. But you're the trash taker outer.
I'm the trash man.
The trash man. What an honor.
I mean, when you have all the babies, I feel like we go through it a bunch. I don't know.
Are you good about putting your trash can out on trash pickup day?
Well, I have two reasons for not being good at it.
Oh.
One is that when we were kids, it was really perfect that trash day was Monday. And so it was like you and I, like on Sunday night, as like part of the weekend winding down, mom and dad would be like, all right, Ben and Jonathan, go empty all the trash cans around the house.
I remember that.
So you and I, every single week, would go and do this, and then we'd drive the cans up to the road. So, and it felt like very perfect, like not like the week is over, this week's trash is gone.
Yes.
Right.
Agreed.
So the trash pickup day at my house now, though, is Tuesday instead of Monday.
You're kidding me.
Oh, yes.
The audacity.
I know. So like if it was Monday, I feel like I'd be like, the week is starting, time to drag it down there. Or like or it could be the same thing. Sunday night, time to take them down. Easy. But like Tuesday, like there's no mental like tick in my head that's like, oh yeah, this is a good day to bring the trash down, that like completes a cycle. Like Tuesday is not the end or the beginning of any cycle.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Heard.
It's terrible.
Heard.
So that's a problem. That's one thing, is that I'm like mentally ingrained to trash being done at the end of the week. And then also, I couldn't even tell you what trash pickup day was at my last house because we had an alley. So the trash can would just sit
in
where
its,
they pick it up.
In its location.
And I would just, anytime I had to bring the trash out, I'd just bring the bag out to the trash can, and every now and then it'd be empty again. So
that is amazing.
Yeah. So all of a sudden I'm having to remember it after spending a good many adult years and not having to think about it at all.
Never thinking about it. Yeah. No, I have the exact same problem. It always baffles me. I like, we'll go outside and it'll be Thursday morning for me, and all of my neighbors will have theirs out. And I'm like, all of you remember.
But they do.
But they do all the time. Yeah. And then like at the beginning of the year, they send you like a little flyer in the mail that tells you like, hey, these are the weeks that like have a holiday. So like it'll either be a day earlier or a day later. Yeah. They all also pay attention to that little flyer.
Oh, man.
I just put it out on the same day every week.
And with for 2 days sometimes.
With an 80% success rate.
Yeah.
Anyway, I feel like we've had a fantastic, fantastic week of the pop.
Oh, me too.
Thank you to everybody for tuning in this week. If you have any quality feedback you want to send our way about any of our various topics today, what do we cover? Beanie Babies?
Beanie Babies, eBay, Pokemon cards.
Pokemon cards, whether or not I'm on the Truman Show, whether or not you ever took accelerated reader exams.
How you cheated on the accelerated reader exams.
Whether or not the Harry Potter books were available on the accelerated reader exams, and whether or not you went to that auction with me in Rocky Mountain, Virginia, and you got to win the boombox, because honestly, I would still want it to this day.
Like, mail it to me.
Mail it to me. I need it. I need the validation that I read enough books.
Yeah.
You can email any of your thoughts or feedback to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Otherwise, guys, until next week, bye.
Pop, pop.